Well, friends, it was sure great to see that video about what God did in our youth ministry. I think Pastor Nick said we had about 65 students there, and we're just so excited about what God's doing in our youth ministry, believing that the youth retreat was simply a catalyst for the future. I always say that the future church is found in our next generation. And so continue to pray for Pastor Nick as he gives great leadership to our youth ministries. Many, many years ago, as Leonardo da Vinci was preparing to paint the famous Last Supper picture, he got into an argument with a fellow painter. The argument was quite heated, and Leonardo da Vinci found himself worked up in an incredible way. As he was getting ready to paint, he started to think about what the picture might look like. And he would begin the painting with the picture of Judas. And as he thought about what Judas's face would look like, to no surprise, he thought, man, the best face for Judas would be the guy that I just got an argument with. And so he, with the picture of this man in his mind, he painted Judas's face to be that of the man he had just been in a fight with. It looked perfect. It looked exactly like him. And he was quite proud of himself, and every time he looked over at Judas, he thought, that's right, that's what this guy would look like. That's what Judas would look like. He was then going to be moving on to painting the face of Jesus. And as he would prepare himself to paint that face, he found himself getting creative block. He wasn't able to imagine what Jesus' face would look like, and he found himself struggling to paint the picture, and he wasn't quite sure why, and so he backed away from the painting and began to reflect on what the problem was. As he thought about it, he realized that his emotions had been so tied up with the argument he had just had with this painter. And he knew that the frustrations that he had experienced were being expressed in his painting, and that there was not just anger, it wasn't just frustration, but it actually had grown to bitterness. And he realized that because he painted the face of Judas to look like this man, that it was representing the bitterness in his heart. And so this great painter decided that he would change the look on Judas's face to be a random individual, somebody he would not know. And he would remove this person's face who he had been in an argument with. And the moment that he did this, the moment that he had released the bitterness, he was able to be free to paint the face of Jesus. It's interesting how that when we find ourselves in chaotic situations with people, in moments of conflict, in moments of difficulty, we really do struggle to fulfill what God wants to do with us. In those moments when there is great conflict or put pressure on the outside that comes at us, we find ourselves in places at times where we're unable to let God work through us and in us. We've been walking through the story of Jesus in his final moments. And Jesus is getting closer and closer to going to the cross. And as he's preparing, he finds himself in the garden praying. We talked about that last Sunday. And he's about to step out of his prayer time to a mob of individuals. The scene that we're going to look at this morning is going to be a chaotic scene. It's going to be a scene full of conflict and a bunch of different things that take place that would immediately pull out the negative emotions. But what we see in this scene, that's the preparation and the catalyst for Jesus going to the cross, we see not the normal response that you would normally see in these situations, but what we see is the response of a king. And I want you this morning to look into your Bibles as we talk about a king's response. We're going to look at Matthew chapter 26, verses 47 to 56. If we can put that up on the screen, it says this. While he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived with him. One of the 12 arrived. With him was a large crowd armed with swords and clubs, sent from the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now the betrayer had arranged the signal with them. The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him. Going at once to Jesus, Judas said, "Greetings, Rabbi," and kissed him. Jesus replied, "Do what you came for, my friend." The next slide. Then the men stepped forward, seized Jesus, and arrested him. With that, one of Jesus' companions reached for his sword, drew it out, and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. "Put your sword back in its place," Jesus said to him. "For all who draw the sword will die by the sword. Do you think I cannot call on my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels?" But how then would the scriptures be fulfilled that say it must happen in this way? In that hour, Jesus said to the crowd, am I leading a rebellion that you have come with swords and clubs to capture me? Every day I sat in the temple courts teaching, and you did not arrest me. But this has all taken place, that the writings of the prophets might be fulfilled. Then all the disciples deserted him and fled. Matthew chapter 26, 47 to 56. Friends, it's a scene of chaos. Jesus has come out of prayer, and it's the most unique transition from a prayer meeting. But it seems in this moment that everything seems to turn upside down. The way things should be get completely reversed. Jesus' friend becomes his enemy. We see a follower of Jesus, Peter, become a fighter. And we see the innocent Jesus himself become the one who's accused of being guilty. Everything gets turned on its head. It's a moment of conflict, a crowd, a mob with religious leaders, and one of Jesus' own in the center of it coming at him. It's the moment of conflict, the moment of chaos with others. And I don't know about you, but I'm sure that if that was the situation was me, that I might respond in a little bit more of an abrupt way than Jesus does. But what Jesus shows us in these situations is the king's response. The response that everybody who's in his kingdom needs to bring to conflict situations. And I want to show you what Jesus, the king, brings to the situation that he finds himself in. The very first thing that Jesus brings is an unexpected kindness. It's absolutely incredible because Judas has set the stage for the mob, and he's given to the rulers this signal, this sign that they will know who it is that they need to arrest. Because friends, we need to understand that it wasn't in the days of social media. They weren't able to go on Facebook and see Jesus' profile. There wasn't Kodak camera that would identify a picture. They weren't quite sure. Some had seen this Jesus, but he looked like a typical Jewish man. And so Judas would give a signal, and he would enter the garden with this crowd, and he would come to the rabbi, and he would kiss the rabbi like he had done other times, a sign of greeting. And so we see this, the crowd following, Judas standing there, comes before Jesus, looks him in the eyes, and he kisses Jesus and says, greetings, rabbi. It's so incredible that in the moment this takes place, Jesus responds in a unique way, an unexpected way. For what he says is he calls Judas friend. I know in the passage we just read, you see friend at the end, but in the original language, it's this greeting where he starts off friend. He calls Judas friend, the one who's going to betray him, the one who's going to cause him harm, the one who's acting as the catalyst for the cross. Jesus calls him friend. Friend. This word friend is an open-hearted expression that one gives to another companion, and yet it doesn't reflect a great intimacy. He's not saying, Judas, you and I are super close, but he is saying in this one word that there is an open heart towards Judas. Open heart. It's unexpected. You see, in this moment when Jesus calls Judas friend, he disconnects Judas's actions from who he is. And that's what kindness is. You see, in our life, we seem to respond to people based upon what they do. When someone hurts us, we want to hurt them back. If someone were to bless us, we might smile and we might speak kind words to them. If someone were to do something good, we would applaud them. If someone were to say something funny, we would laugh. Whatever someone did, whatever action was revealed, we will tend to communicate back something that is reflective of what they just did. But that's not what Jesus does. Jesus doesn't look at Judas and think to himself, this man is about to betray me. This man is about to get me arrested. This man is going to be the catalyst for the cross. No, Jesus acts in an unexpected way, a way that is disconnected from Judas's actions. And friends, I want to say this morning. The true kindness ignores the actions and has compassion and tenderness based upon a person's humanity. It's showing tenderness and compassion to somebody because they're human, not because of what they do. Our tendency in life seems to be that we will only respond to somebody based upon how they respond to us. If someone does something negative, we respond back negatively. If someone does something kind to us, we respond back in a kind way. But Jesus chooses to respond to Judas in a way that's beyond his actions, that's disconnected from his actions. He looks this man in the face and he responds by saying, "Friend." It's an act of humanity. It's an act of kindness. Kindness acts in a way that is precipitated by... Sorry, I can't even see my writing this morning. But it is precipitated by the acts that someone does, and it focuses on the fact that they are human. I don't know how many of you remember the TV show Mr. Rogers. It was a TV show that my wife and I watched on a regular basis when we were young. And just recently, Ainsley and Brock and I watched the movie that had come out last year called A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. The story of Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, and a journalist by the name of Tom Junod. Tom Junod was this writer for a magazine, and he would interview some of the top actors and some of the top stars, personalities. What ended up happening each time he would interview them, no matter how things went, he would find a cynical side of the individual. And he would write these scathing articles about them, and it got so bad that the stars really didn't want to connect with Junod. One day, his boss comes to Tom Junod and says, "Hey, we have a story for you." And it seems just like a token story, because they've got to give him something because of the way he's burned bridges with people. Tom is going to interview Mr. Rogers. Not quite impressed with this story, and yet he's been limited on what he's allowed to do, and so he makes his way to meet Fred Rogers. He's quite enamored when he first meets him, because the personality that he sees in the TV show is the same person that he greets on a personal level, a man full of utter kindness. Junod starts to press Rogers at different moments in the film, and he is completely surprised by the fact that Rogers doesn't sidestep his TV personality and become responsive or reactive to the actions, but he continues to treat Tom Junod like a human being with kindness, an unexpected kindness. He's perplexed by this. And there's this one moment in the movie where the executive producer sees Junod and he says something to this fact, so something to this kind of statement. He says, "You know, you're the type of person that Fred Rogers loves to spend time with." At first, Junod is taken back, and he feels quite insulted because he's thinking that there's something wrong with him, that Fred must be with the broken people or people that no one likes. And what he soon discovers is that what it is about Junod that Fred Rogers loves is he loves going to people that have forgotten the human part of themselves, that have only been treated by people based upon their actions and have become kind of hard-hearted and callous on the outside because people have responded to them negatively and appropriately because of how they've responded to the other individual. And yet, Fred Rogers loves to pull the humanity out of a person, to look beyond the words, to look beyond the actions, to look into the soul of a human being, and to recognize that that human being is a human being, and that that human being deserves kindness. And as Fred Rogers continuously meets with Tom Junod, and continuously, perpetually responds in an unexpected kindness, Tom Junod sees his heart softening, begins to open up and share things that he hasn't shared with other people. And by the end of the movie, we see a transformation in Tom Junod, one that not only has received kindness, but one that reciprocates kindness. Friends, in the moment that Jesus turns to Judas, the one who's about to betray him, he gives him unexpected kindness by calling him friend. And as believers of the kingdom, as people who are following our king, we've got to act like Jesus. And when there are those around us who are doing things, even betraying us, we need to look beyond their actions, look into their heart, look into their soul, and speak words of life and show unexpected kindness that goes beyond the actions of the individual and looks into their humanity. Jesus shows unexpected kindness. The second thing that Jesus brings into this situation is confrontation without humiliation. Confrontation without humiliation. Now, this part's kind of hard to see because of the way we read the English translation. But in verse 30, Jesus says to Judas, "Do what you have come for." It literally means what you came for. That's the translation, what you came for. There's not do what you came for. It's just what you came for. And the words that Jesus used, there is a questioning connotation behind it. It's more like, hey, whatever it is that you've come to do, go ahead and do. Well, whatever it is you've come to do, Judas, go ahead and do it. There's this questioning element to it. Like Jesus isn't stating, hey, I know what you've come to do, go and do it. He's saying, hey, if there's something you've come to do, do it. Now, Jesus knows what Judas has come to do. He's already identified Judas as the betrayer at the meal. But he leaves a question there. Now, the disciples at this time don't know that Judas has gone to the extent that he has. They recognize that he's the one who dipped his bread into Jesus' cup. They recognize that he's the one who has betrayed Jesus. They don't even know the full extent of what that means. They don't know that he's betrayed him for 30 pieces of silver. They don't know that he's the one bringing the mob. They don't know what this mob's even for. They don't know. And in the moment that Jesus is confronted by Judas and gets this kiss, "Greetings, Rabbi." Jesus, if it was me, Jesus could have easily done this. He could have looked at Judas and said, "Hey, Judas, I want to tell you something. I know who you are. I know that you betrayed me for 30 pieces of silver. Hey, guys, I want you to know the guy that you've been hanging out with, the guy who's been looking after our money, he sold us out. And Judas, I want you to know that you are a scumbag. I want you to know that you are dirty, that you are the worst of friends, that you have put a knife into my back." And he could have called him out and shamed him in front of everybody. It's not what Jesus does. Jesus asks a question. He presents a statement in a questioning fashion. Whatever you came for. And by wording it in this way, Jesus is confronting Judas. He is confronting him with the question. He is looking into his eyes and leaving the question for Judas to answer. What is it that I have come for? And Judas has to wrestle with the fact that he is about to hand over his master to be crucified. He has to deal with that. Jesus looks into his eyes and says, "Whatever you came for." Friends, this is so important. I want you to understand that Jesus does not pull back from confrontation. He doesn't just let Judas do whatever. And sometimes as Christians, we think that we should just treat people, allow people to act in ways that are unacceptable, and that we should just allow bad behavior to continue on. But that's not what Jesus teaches us. He teaches us this idea of confronting someone, but he does it in a way that doesn't bring humiliation. Doesn't bring humiliation. I remember sharing this story a couple years ago. I'd heard of one of our pastors in Ontario had been at a hotel, standing in line waiting for his room to be prepared, and he was listening to the conversation between the lady behind the counter and another individual. The man who was the guest was quite angry, quite upset with what was going on. Whatever the situation, whether his room was prepared or something was out of alignment with what it should be, the man in front of the counter was quite upset, and he was yelling at this lady. But not just yelling at the lady, he started to use derogatory terms and demean this lady in front of everybody else. Now, friends, I don't know about you, but I've been in these situations before where something's not right, where something that you expect isn't done, where you've gone into a hotel room and things aren't clean, or something that should be in place is out of place, and you feel frustration. And it's okay to confront. But this man was doing more than confronting. He was demeaning the lady behind the counter. My friend, who's a pastor, is a bigger individual, came up to the counter. And he leaned in and broke up the conversation. And he says, "Excuse me, is there a problem here?" The man looked at him and said, "Just leave us alone. This isn't any of your business." my friend who's the pastor of this bigger man, he says, well, I want to make it my business. You see, I just got out of jail. And I haven't been in a fight for quite some time, and I sure would enjoy having a fight right now. Why don't we take this outside into the parking lot? The man who had been so abrupt with the lady behind the counter was shocked and said, are you for real? And he's like, yeah, I'm for real. And the man calmed down and just walked away. The lady behind the counter looked at this guy and says, did you really get out of jail? And he's like, no, I didn't get out of jail. He said, I just thought this man was treating you so rudely that he just needed to be put in his place. Now, I'm not here to debate the questioning or the morality of what my friend did. But what I do want to point out is this, is that it's okay to have moments where you're angry. It's okay to have moments where you're frustrated with other individuals. But to act in a way that humiliates and demeans and shames people is not what the King shows us. It's not at all what the King shows us. This man had a right to be angry about what was taking place in his hotel room. The man had a right to be angry about whatever the situation was. But he had no right to humiliate the lady behind the counter. You see, Jesus shows us that there's a way to confront without humiliation. There's a way to speak to people without humiliating them. A few weeks ago, I was in a minister's gathering. We had been talking about an area that we were trying to lead within Ontario, this initiative, and we had just heard a presentation, and as we were sitting in this group of about 12 or 15 pastors, I listened to the response to the presentation, and there were individuals around the table who began to talk about how we should be leading this and start to talk about their perspectives on it, and they just kept on talking and talking, and as I'm listening to what's going on, I start getting frustrated. Because I look around the room and I know the individuals who are around the room, and the area that we are proposing that we will lead in, they haven't led in their own churches. They're not doing it in their own churches. They are just talking, but there's no action to it, and I start to get frustrated. And so before long, I finally raised my hand and asked the chair of this meeting if I could speak, and I said, look, I need to get going in a few moments, but I just want to ask a very awkward question. And I gave some preamble, and I said, I look around this room and I see individuals who've been in your church long enough that you have the ability to lead in this area, but you haven't. And I'd like to know why. It was like a lead balloon in the room. I asked this question, and I could see faces drop. And in my passion, I had created this awkward moment, and there was just silence through the room. I sat there and I got what I expected. And finally, one of the individuals, one of my friends, he spoke up, kind of gave the explanation for why he hasn't led in this way, and it created a number of other conversations. And the room kind of got warm again, and the people started talking as I sat there silently. As I looked around the room, I started to think about the people that were in the room. I started to think about what I had just done, and as I looked at individuals and some of their struggles in their churches and some of the things they were facing, I realized that what I said could have come across in a softer way. I realized that while I was completely behind my words and the principle of what I confronted, that what I was directing our group to do, to lead by example, was completely right, I may have shamed people in the room. And I start to think about this as I mentally walk through around the room of the people who are there. And I found myself needing to raise my hand again and say, could I just say something? So a few moments ago, I shared a few thoughts and presented a question about what we're doing. And I said, I truly believe that we need to lead by example. I truly believe that. I said, and I apologize if I came across too passionately. I'm very passionate about this area of ministry. But I didn't mean to scold, and I didn't mean to shame. And I said, I do think that there are reasons why you may not be leading this area, and my proposal is that the next time we meet, we would actually examine those reasons, because the people that we're trying to lead have the same reasons, and I'd like us to be proactive about addressing these reasons so that we can properly lead forward. And in that moment, the room kind of shifted because they were confronted by the same truth, but it was done without humiliation. Friends, I want to say to you today that there are people in your life, your friends, your family, People at church, people at work, who will do things at times that frustrate you and make you angry. And it is absolutely okay to confront them about the issues that they're doing wrong or something they've done that has offended you. But what is not right is to humiliate. What is not right is to shame. What is not right is to bring a huge spotlight so that they are embarrassed in front of a group of people. And in that moment we see between Jesus and Judas, he brings a spotlight, but it's a narrow spotlight on Judas's soul. He doesn't expose him to the entire group. He doesn't shame him in front of the group. He simply says, "What is it that you've come to do? Go ahead and do it." Leaves the question with them. He confronts without humiliation. I love this quote by Brené Brown. It says, "Shame erodes the part of us that believes we are capable of change." When we heap shame on people, we think that we're doing something good, that we're making them feel so guilty, that we're humiliating them in a way that will force them to change, but shame actually drives people further down, and the change that we want to see in people's lives won't come. I believe that as we humiliate people, as we shame people, as we publicly expose people, that we are simply driving them into a hole that becomes so dark that they can't even see their way out of it. We need to take the king's example. It seems so trivial, but by him asking Judas, by this questioning statement, "What is it you've come to do? Just do it." He is confronting the man with his own thoughts. He is confronting Judas to reflect upon what his actions will lead to, but he is not humiliating him before the crowd. Confrontation without humiliation. Lastly, Jesus brings restorative healing. Matthew doesn't really tell us what happens when the sword comes out and the ear gets cut off. I'm not sure why Matthew doesn't point to the healing moment. But in order to see the rest of the story, we need to turn to Luke chapter 22, verse 49 to 51. And this is what it says. When Jesus' followers saw what was going to happen, they said, "Lord, should we strike with our swords?" And then one of them struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his right ear. But Jesus answered, "No more of this," and he touched the man's ear, and he healed him. He healed him. It's one of my favorite Peter moments. Because Peter is so radical and so keen on pleasing Jesus that he sees the crowd, and he's starting to pay attention to what this group's there for and what Judas is representing. And all of a sudden, he pulls out his sword in the middle of chaos, in the middle of anger. He just starts to swing it around, and his sword gets caught on a high priest's servant's ear. And as I was reflecting on it this week, I thought this. Outside of Jesus and his crew, the most innocent man in the scene, the most innocent person in the scene is likely the one who gets his ear cut off. This is just a servant who's just trying to serve the high priest. This is not an individual who has the power to express his religious beliefs or his political beliefs. He's simply there to serve his master. Just standing there as an innocent bystander, and yet it's the sword of Peter that comes out and takes off his ear. I want to tell you something, friends. In the middle of conflict moments, in the middle of our chaotic situations with other individuals, it is so easy for us to bring out our verbal and our emotional swords and start swinging in all sorts of directions. And what happens in those moments most often is that innocent parties get harmed. Is that individuals who are on the sidelines, people who are not even in the core of it, that they get hurt. That kids are watching mom and dad argue and say things that they shouldn't say. That people in the pews are watching others who are debating and arguing with each other. And the innocent get hurt. And in the middle of this chaos, Peter throws out his sword and starts to wield it and swipes at the high priest servant's ear and cuts it off, the innocent. And then Jesus does something that is so unique. Jesus comes over to the high priest's servant's ear. This is the Jesus that's about to be arrested. This is the Jesus who's completely innocent, who's been betrayed by his friend. This is the Jesus who's going to be left alone in just mere moments. This is the Jesus who's coming to the end of his mission. This Jesus comes over. And in the moment, while everybody is wanting to create chaos and harm even the innocent, Jesus takes the ear and puts it back on the man's head, and he restores it to the place it's supposed to be, restorative healing. Friends, I want to tell you that the King shows us what we are called to do in moments where there's difficulties around us. We are not to be sword wielders, but we are to bring restorative healing to the people around us. You see, it's so easy to do the other thing. It's so easy to be a Peter. I remember, and I've shared little bits of this along the way since we've been here. I remember when my parents split up, and my grandmother was so angry with my dad. I mean, he's the one who had left my mother, my grandmother's daughter. She had so much anger in her heart towards my dad. And I remember one night, shortly into this journey, my sister and I had just been with my dad. We had visited with him, and it was a great visit. We loved my dad, and we were out visiting with him, and things went really well. And my dad had given my sister and I these big stuffed dogs. They were almost life-size. And I remember it had this little mouth where you could put things in it and kind of hide it. And it, little kid, it was so cool. And we came home with such joy in our hearts. We walk in the front door holding these big toys, and I could see the look in my grandmother's face. And she immediately confronted my sister and I and asked us about the dogs, and then asked us about our demeanor being so positive. She got angry, and she started to say negative things about my dad, and she began to question our love for my mom, and she began to challenge us. And I remember the conversation got to a point where my sister and I burst into tears. She was so angry with my dad that she was wielding her sword just like Peter's, that rather than trying to bring healing to the situation, she was cutting off the innocent's ears. She was bringing pain to my sister and I. And my sister and I stood in that kitchen in Brampton, Ontario, and we began to bawl to tell my mom that we loved her, and she knew, but my grandmother was just, she was talking out of anger. And while the conversation got resolved, I remember going to bed that night with this dog in bed, replaying the conversation with my grandma over and over and over again. And even after moments of it being over, the pain was still there. That's what happens. In our pain, we don't realize what we're bringing to kids. We don't realize what we're bringing to the people around us. We may not realize what we bring to people even in the church. That some of the things we might say around the kitchen table, what we might say around the pews or in the foyer, what we might say with those we meet in the store, how those little slicing words are heard by the people who are around us, children, others. We're leaving people in pieces. Jesus talks about restorative healing, not through his words, but through his life, by taking the situation and healing, bringing healing. There's a man by the name of Greg, and he was returning to his home state of Indiana for a small high school reunion. He had visited his parents and then gathered together with the majority of his classmates. They hadn't seen each other for 17 years. The night was going well, and they were rehashing stories of teachers and moments throughout their high school years that just brought all kinds of laughter. As the night was winding down, he was walking through the auditorium where the group had gathered, and he saw one of his classmates, a lady by the name of Debbie. Debbie was in the corner by herself, not interacting with other people, and tears were in her eyes. Greg walked over to Debbie and asked her what was wrong, and she tried to push him off, but he kept pressing. He could tell that there had to be something spiritual going on or something emotional going on, and so he pressed her more and more. Debbie then revealed what was going on in her heart. She said, "You know, no matter how good this is, I just can't get past some things that happened years ago." She went on to tell Greg that when she was in grade 2, this was 27 years prior to this very moment, 27 years prior to this, when she was in grade 2, there was a lady by the name of Karen, who was just a little girl at the time, who didn't really like Debbie and formed a club called the Debbie Haters Club. And through this club, Karen would get people to say unkind things and treat Debbie in an unkind way and just doling out the verbal sword over and over and over again. And here was Debbie 27 years later, still feeling the pain of it. Greg said to her, "Debbie, you need to make things right. Karen's here today. You need to talk to her about this." And Debbie's like, no, I'm completely fine. I don't need this. I don't want to. And he says, "You need to. Healing needs to take place." And Greg acted as the person to bring restorative healing by going over and getting Karen and explaining to Karen a little bit about what went on. Said, "You need to meet with Debbie." Brought the three of them into a room and he set the stage for them. And he then left Karen and Debbie and walked out of the room and continued conversations with other people. A short while later, this couple, these two ladies, walked out of the room. And the tears were gone in Debbie's eyes. There was a smile on their face, and he could see there was an amicable posture towards one another. There was healing. Greg had stepped into a situation where there had been pain, where there had been hurt, where the chaos of grade 2 had created all kinds of damage, and he provided restorative healing. Church, I want to tell you something today. It's easy to pull out your sword. It's easy to hurt people. It's easy to find what's wrong with people. It's easy to just let your mouth just open up and spill the words. But what God's calling us to do is what Jesus did, is to step into situations, even when it hurts for us, and to take the ear and put it back on the head, to restore people to the place that God's called them, to breathe life, to speak life, to bring reconciliation and to do the miraculous. We're called to be like Jesus. Jess, I'm going to ask that you come back to the keyboard. We find this story, and Jesus is about to go before his trial, which we'll look at next week. He's in a situation that would cause many of us to react in a negative way. But the king brings unexpected kindness, treats Judas as a human. We find the king confronting without humiliation. And we see this king bringing restorative healing. A couple weeks ago, Ainsley and I found ourselves at the St. Laurent Mall on a Thursday or Friday night. Decided that we'd go for something to eat, and we're not big foodies. We don't go to fancy restaurants. We try to minimize what we spend on eating out. And so we decided that we'd just go up to the food court and grab something quick. And so I decided I'd go to the burrito place that's there. I was standing in line, and I was the second person from the cashier just waiting for my burrito to be finished. And anyway, I couldn't help but hear the conversation that was right before me. There was a lady just in front of me. She was about to pay, and she started to accost the lady behind the counter. She started to say to her, you need to know I was first in line. I should have paid for my meal before the last person you let go through. Don't you know that I was here first?" And she went on like this lady just kidnapped her daughter. I mean, it was ridiculous. And she began to scold her, and she began to berate her, and she just made a huge deal of what appeared to be very small. And I looked at the lady behind the counter to see her reaction. This lady very calmly said, "Ma'am, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. The lady's food was prepared before yours, and so that's why we did, but I'm sorry." And this lady, you could tell, like, she gave a few more lines, and she was still angry, and as the lady behind the counter just calmly apologized, you could see the lady didn't even know what to do, as she was just kind of twitching, like angry, but she just used all her words, and so she paid the meal and walked away in a storm. I walked up to pay for my burrito, and I looked at the lady behind the counter, and she's focused just on the next sale. I looked at her, and I said, "Hey, I just want to tell you something." I said, "You just handled that brilliantly. I commend you for the patience you showed. I commend you for how you handled that lady." The lady behind the counter said, "Well, thank you." She said, "You know, it's really crazy. That lady had actually given the lady in front of her permission to pay first. And so I only responded in a way that was appropriate to her allowing this lady to go forward. I'm not sure why she reacted like this. And as I stood there, I was amazed that there was an individual who not only treated this lady like this, but she completely missed the fact that I was watching, that I was paying attention. And my heart went to the lady behind the counter, not to her. I was impressed by the one who was getting it, not the one who was giving it. And what I wish that lady who had just walked away had known was not only that were her actions wrong, but that people were watching, that there was a person watching how she would respond to an unfavorable situation. And this morning, friends, what I'm going to share with you is this. When you reflect upon what we've talked about this morning, I want you to know that there is always somebody in line watching. There is always somebody who's watching how you're responding to people that you have unfavorable moments with. There's always somebody watching how you respond to the person in the restaurant, the person at Costco as you're trying to get your toilet paper, the person in the pew that does something that you don't like, the person in the committee meeting that says something that is unfavorable to you. Somebody's always watching. The question I have is, will you respond in a way that properly represents the King in whose kingdom you say you dwell? We need to look towards Jesus to be our example this week. And so as we close this service, I pray God's blessings upon you. But I pray that in every situation you find yourself in this week, that you would be thinking about Jesus in that garden, Jesus in that disciple named Judas, Jesus in that sword-wielding moment, and you would choose to represent Jesus well and let others who are watching know what the King truly looks like. Let me pray for you this morning. Jesus, I thank you for those who are watching. I pray that your hand would be upon them and that you would give them incredible grace, kindness, the fruit of the Spirit in their life, so that in those situations where they're with unfavorable people or in people that they are in good relationship with but have an unfavorable moment with, that God, they would respond like you responded. This unexpected kindness, confrontation without humiliation, Jesus. And that they would find every opportunity they can to bring restorative healing. Let us realize that people are watching. And I pray that you would use our church to be the hope for the world. That Jesus, King of Kings and Lord of Lords, that we would represent you and your kingdom well. Would you be with our people? And Lord, if there's anybody who's watching online who doesn't know you, would they find a friend this week or contact our office and find what they need to do to get through to the next steps of serving you fully and experiencing the life that you want to bring with them. So Lord, bless our congregation now. May you give them a great week. We pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen. Amen. Have a great week, everyone. We'll see you next Sunday.